the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is Bill Carter, and we're glad you're here today. Today is our roadshow, a special documentary of our time on the road. We called it our first international tour of Southeastern Virginia. Let's have a little travel music to get us started. First off, here's Mike Carbone, venerable saxophonist, just a wonderful guy to be around. How you feeling about being in Norfolk, Virginia?
It's pretty cool here. It's actually very warm here, which is compared to New York. It's right. A treat.
Well, and we're being treated extremely well.
Yes, we are. We've been overly treated, best possible way, by great food, great people, great friends, great laughter, and yeah. We're making some real good music.
Well, thanks, Mike.
Hey, my pleasure. See you on the bandstand.
So here we are with Bob Guffey, who is the pastor of the Freemason Street Baptist Church, downtown Norfolk, Virginia. I've known Bob, 20 years maybe?
I think so.
And he's chased me down a few times to play at the churches he served. Bob, it's great to be in your place.
From 1999 to 2006, so 7 years in Connecticut, and that's where I really learned to appreciate jazz, and learned to appreciate jazz because of Bill Carter. So,
come on.
Well, it's the truth, and I'll tell you my story. And I always thought I'd like jazz. In high school, I played in the jazz band, the swing band or whatever.
But what'd you play?
Trumpet. Uh-huh. Yeah, trumpet. But I just had trouble accessing. So I said I'm going to the Lectionary Homiletics Festival, and I think it was at First Presbyterian Atlanta. And there's this guy going to do a thing called Preaching as Jazz. And so I'm going to go. And, the festival was smaller in those days. There were probably 600 or so, ministers were all sitting there. And he's at the Steinway or whatever. And he goes, preaching and jazz are a lot alike. And part of this, you don't believe me because you don't know that jazz has rules. Mm-hmm. It has rules of interpretation. So, like, you take the biblical text, you lay down the text, then you begin to add all your hermeneutical, principles, and then you begin to see what's coming out. And he said, this is what I'm going to do. He said, take that Presbyterian hymnal, and I want all of you to sing Amazing Grace. I'll lay down the first verse, and then I'm going to put the rules of jazz down. And by the time we're on the fourth and fifth verses, Bill is soaring someplace in outer space while we're still doing, the thing. And I'm going... So I went home and I played guitar not as much now as I did, and I convinced a guy who was a studio musician it was a jazz guy. He taught me one summer. I said, I just want to learn enough. Right. So, he pulled out some, Charlie Parker or something. He said, we're going to start learning some things. And he helped me. And I got into St. John Coltrane and started listening to Love Supreme every Sunday morning.
Going
to church, yeah. Snowy days or not.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah.
It would burn the snow away.
Yes, indeed,
sure.
It would.
Yeah,
It would.
Yeah.
That's my story.
Well, that's a great story. Now, you played guitar, you played trumpet.
Trumpet.
See, I always thought that was terribly unfair to be able to play two different kinds of instruments.
It probably is.
And Bill, he can't do anything but play piano.
That's it. Yeah. That's
it. And the last album, I play finger cymbals.
Ting, ting, ting.
That's right.
Like the little monkey.
That's right. He taught me.
Right. So where does jazz fit into your life now? What do you listen to?
Jazz is very much a part of my spiritual life, and a lot of it really goes back to Bill. There's just something about jazz that I think is a lot like life, because I started thinking, maybe not completely, but I got to thinking, a lot of what makes jazz good, in my view, is it's full of unresolved chords. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, eventually you get to that resolution or you don't.
It's a new day on our tour. Today, this is the calm before the storm. We are in Williamsburg, Virginia. It's early in the morning, and Mike and I will head over to Williamsburg Presbyterian Church shortly to rehearse a piece with the choir and to present that piece and another instrumental in their worship service. And then this afternoon, we're doing a 4 o'clock concert of my jazz requiem, Lux Aeterna, and doing that with a regional choir from around here. We went through the pieces yesterday with a rather vigorous rehearsal. Their director is a hoot. We're looking forward to making some music together. Hey, it's Bill Carter again. So I've come all the way down to Williamsburg, and in the Hampton Inn going for my breakfast, who should I run into but Jeff Kellum, trying to put some Cheerios into his mouth.
These are heart-shaped Cheerios. They're left over from Valentine's Day of 2014.
Are they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Did you get one of the stale muffins?
I'm looking at your stale eggs right now. What kind of place is this?
Yeah. Well, it's a good
place. No, perfectly fine.
It's a good place, yeah. But it's, you know, road food. And suddenly, in the Hampton Inn, here comes Mike Carbone, and he's been peeling an orange. He's got it all over his chin.
Good morning, everybody. Good morning, Bill.
You sleep well on the road?
Not really. I've been up since 4:30.
Oh, man. He's probably been practicing that whole time.
Yes, I was. I was working my way through the charts. There was nothing better to do.
So, Jeff here with Tyler Dempsey, and we're just waiting for a performance. Do you get really nervous?
Sometimes. Yeah. Depends on the situation and how well I know the music and who I'm playing with. But in this scenario, I'm amongst friends and I know the music, so I'm feeling good.
Good. What do you think about when you're performing?
I try not to think. I try to just be engaged with the music. In this case, I'm reading charts. If I'm not reading charts, oftentimes I have my eyes closed and I'm just trying to fall into the music and be supportive with everybody I'm playing with and do the best I can.
Yeah. Now, this time you're playing music you haven't played before, right, publicly?
Right. So it's a little bit more reading heavy. Like my eyes are a little bit more glued to the paper because I'm not as familiar. Yeah. But the idea is to get as familiar as possible so I don't have to be looking at the music and so I can feel that freedom of just playing. Yeah.
Where else do you play?
Play all over NEPA.
That's northeastern Pennsylvania for our international audience.
That's right. I freelance, so I often play in the Poconos and the Lehigh Valley and the Scranton-Wilkes-Barre region.
Yeah. Yeah. And what kind of bands? Is it all jazz?
99% jazz, uh-huh. Yeah. Which is, I feel super fortunate that in a small area like northeastern Pennsylvania that I'm able to make a living just playing the music that I love.
Right, right.
Yeah.
So, of course, one of the venues in the Poconos is the Deerhead Inn.
Yeah.
You played there?
I have, yeah. That was actually, I went there back in high school with my father to one of the jam sessions. and I sat in, and I was super nervous. That was the time where I was really nervous. You know, I was playing with much more experienced musicians.
Right.
Fast forward, I would, you know, check out any artists coming to town there. I would try to go as much as possible, and then eventually I built relationships with the folks there and became the house drummer for the Thursday night jam session, and did that for many years. And now I visit there, you know, a couple times a year, and I'm playing there at the end of May, actually.
Yeah, wonderful. So the idea of being on the road, you've got a young family at home, and is this the first time you've left to go on the road for, it's a short trip, there's 5 days.
It's the first time since I have the family.
Yeah.
I did do it previously, and it was a bit longer of a tour. It was also done by car, and we went all across the country from Pennsylvania to Texas to California, all over, and I really enjoyed it. But now having a family, it's a little bit tougher.
Right.
You know, I miss them and don't want to be gone for too long. Yeah, you know,
you're doing FaceTime along the way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I can't imagine if that wasn't invented what I would do.
Then, when the band got to Richmond, we're going into a restaurant one night, and Jeff Kellum runs into somebody he'd known years ago. And here's that story.
All right, Aaron Houghton, the Reverend.
This is he.
Okay, let's talk about, you do jazz festivals at your church. Where did you get into jazz? Where did your jazz come from?
Well, jazz was what the music program was at my high school. When I got there, it was James Saxmo Gates was the director of the band program. But the band program was a jazz program, and so that's why I got into it. And then shortly afterwards, then I don't think he actually had a teaching license, and so he lost his job. And it was this whole controversy, and it broke so many hearts. And the reason why I had gotten into music and the person I had wanted to study under was no longer there.
Yeah.
And so they brought in people that didn't know jazz to teach the jazz band class, and that's what I, you know, continued and suffered under. But I loved it so much, that's what I went and I did at college. I studied at the Miles Davis School of Jazz in North Carolina, in Greensboro.
Wow.
UNC Greensboro. Had a fantastic time. And met a man there my senior year who invited me to come and listen to his jazz albums. I called it Second Church.
Yeah.
He had a wall covered in LPs. And he would have prepared this entire set for me by the time I showed up after church on Sundays, and he had a story about every recording we listened to, whether he was there in the room when it was recorded, or he saw so-and-so perform, or he would scat along to every solo. Like, he knew it. Like,
and his name?
This was Sherman Caldwell. Now, Sherman called me his protege, and he was certain that I was going to go on to do great things in jazz. And it was while I was hanging out with him and doing, you know, like, this was after I graduated from college, continuing this relationship, he confided in me, you know, that it was around the time he found out he had been diagnosed with cancer that he reached out to the School of Music to see if someone would come and listen to music with him so he could share that, which was valuable with him before he left. He moved into palliative care. He moved into hospice. And I remember there was a Sunday that I got some friends from the School of Music together, and we went and we performed in his hospital room there in palliative care. And he died that next Tuesday.
Yeah. Wow.
When he died, he gifted me with a box of ties. 300 neckties. I mean, going from the 50s through the 90s, some of them were wearable, some of them weren't. Yeah. I had those turned into the stole that I was given when I was ordained. So jazz has been a part of a lot of what I do.
And your first instrument was drums, or did you take piano?
I think my first instrument, well, it was probably the voice. And then the second instrument was violin. But violin lessons more the teacher had a Nintendo, so I was more excited to go to lessons because while my brother was taking lessons, I got to play Nintendo. And then we all did piano lessons.
Yeah.
And that, I think, was really where it was like, okay, you can use multiple parts of your body to make music at the same time. Right. And that coordination of pressing pedals and playing left hand and right hand translated well to drums for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was around fourth or fifth grade that I started playing drums. And just being able to read music, I think, was something that gave me a leg up against a lot of the other elementary schoolers that were joining band at that time. Right. I could read music already, and so I could start excelling in the drums while they were still learning how to, you know, do the right fingerings to get the notes out and how to read the music and stuff.
Right. So what about church? What did church nurture you in any music?
Well, you're asking the wrong person. The person who nurtured me in music at church is sitting across the table from me right now. This is Mrs. Deborah Houghton, the director of the Cherub Choir at Bon Air Presbyterian Church. Cantus Choir. Oh, it wasn't the Cherubs, I suppose. Yeah, right. But yes, my mother, started us all in music and nurtured us all.
The reason I ask about that is that, well, I'll tell you why I asked about that later. But.
Yeah, there's dessert on the table now.
Yeah, that's right. All right, one more thing, though, about Jazz Vespers.
Yeah.
What was the idea behind Jazz Vespers for you?
If you can't tell, if I'm given the opportunity, I will talk way too much. And so Jazz Vespers was a ministry designed specifically for me to shut up and give everyone the opportunity to listen to something other than words.
Yeah.
And to guide the meditative and prayerful and mindful practices with something that allows that not speaking to feel less uncomfortable than silence.
Right, right.
And music embraces us in contemplation in such a beautiful way. And so Jazz Vespers was a way to create space for relationship with the divine that we didn't feel so inclined to interrupt.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Bill Carter here. We're kind of winding up the tour, just some few miles from home. And Tyler Dempsey, tell us some of your favorite musical moments on this tour.
Well, what I really enjoyed was getting to know each venue and the acoustics in each spot. Each one presented a different challenge and different musical kind of approach, and the last one at Richmond Hill that we ended with, I could tell we were all firing on all cylinders and really enjoyed that one particularly.
It's amazing, isn't it, how we play pretty well most of the time, but after we play a couple times, that next time is always going to be even better.
Yeah, as we travel together and eat together and sleep, you know, in rooms together, whatever.
we sleep together.
Well, but we build a closer connection, and I think that is evident in the music.
Hey, Tony Marino, tell us about some of your favorite moments on the tour, and don't use any first names.
Favorite what on the tour?
Moments on the tour.
Oh, moments. I would have to say, playing in different venues. The first venue we played was really special because the bands, I think, sounded beautiful in that church. So it was so easy to interact and listen to each other. The second one was rehearsal. That was a little strange, but went pretty well. And then we did the concert, and everybody did great on that. So the camaraderie was fantastic between everyone. A lot of hamburgers on this tour, a lot of fish and chips. We finally got to the Presbyterian cookies. But then the last night was a very special one. And I have to say, probably the most special thing of the whole tour was the audiences. Whether they be small or large, they were really responsive, and that really made it worthwhile.
Yeah, I think the music's central when we play, but the friendships around the music, both between the musicians and the folks who came out to hear us and hang around with us and even pay for some of our meals on occasion, that was extra special. And we're grateful. So here's to the next time. So we're back from the tour, Jeff. What kind of reflections do you have after all those miles?
Well, I was thinking of the three concerts that we did. They were all different, a lot of the same music, but different audiences. And the first one was a small but appreciative audience. I thought the band was pretty loose. Everybody was excited to be where they wanted to be after hours driving. It was fun and not a lot of pressure. It seemed like everybody was having a good time.
Yeah.
And then you switch over to Sunday, the afternoon concert featuring the Requiem, where you're working with the choir. And I sensed in the leader of Presby Bop a bit of tension and stress. And I think for all the musicians working with the voices and the choir director, I think a lot of stress. But it didn't come through with the music. I felt like the music was just as together as it was at the first concert Friday night.
Well, and that was a lot of compressed energy in a short period of time with complicated music that had to be figured out on one pass.
Yeah. And then the Monday night concert was a good-sized group for that space, and everybody was comfortable, probably the most appreciative and active audience of the three.
Yeah.
And maybe a little bit of sense that, hey, we're going home tomorrow. And so pressure's off, and kind of, I thought, a very free-spirited concert.
Yeah, I was very proud of the guys we played. We always enjoyed being with one another, and that comes across. I think musically, it was about as good as we get. You know, we had three good nights, three very different nights. But you know, I think the third one was probably my favorite in that it was freewheeling and there was no time constraint.
Yes, that's right.
And we weren't going to, I didn't say, whisper to the guys, okay, short solos on this one and count it off. We just let it go. What happened, happened.
Yep. And folks were willing to stay, they would have stayed another hour or more.
So, Jeff, you've traveled with the band. What do you notice as a difference between hearing the band in the concert and actually being behind the scenes on the tour?
These guys drink a lot of wine. and I'm not saying everybody was, inebriated, not at all.
No.
I think the fellowship and the meals that were shared together, and then afterwards, when everybody gathers in your room or in the suite, there's just a camaraderie there that's very evident, and it certainly feeds into the performance of the music. So I think that kind of friendship deepens the commitment to play well and to play for the composer, but also to use their individual talents to sound as good as they can.
Yeah, our parlance for that gathering is the hang, in the hanging out. And it is one of the characteristics of a good engagement.
And the younger you are, I think the better you can do it. I'm not playing. I'm just following you guys around and pointing the camera. And I was just exhausted at the end of every day. So old thing had to go back to the room and crash. But when the times I did stop by, it was very clear we're just enjoying hanging out together.
Well, it was a great gift to have you along and to be part of this. So thanks for coming, and
enduring 970 miles, three stops, some road food, and a lot of music.
I gained 2 pounds. I think Mike Carbone told me he gained a couple of pounds as well.
Yeah.
I was in the car with Mike, both on the way down for 7 hours and on the way back for 7 hours. What was it like in the car with the three guys that were with you?
Oh, it was loquacious. Yeah. One of the interesting things that that our listeners might not realize is most of the time when we're in the car, we don't listen to music. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know Mike had his Sirius XM going on. We just talked, and sometimes we just didn't talk. We grumble about the traffic near the Washington Beltway, or wonder how long Delaware and Maryland would be. So we're back, and future adventures are coming. So I guess that's it for today.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.